Welcome to Day Zero Update for July 5th, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Sologi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, two-man crew again this week, but we have plenty of things to talk about.
Yeah, mostly what we're now calling the Microsoft Massacre.
Yeah, we got a bunch of industry news, some good, mostly bad stuff.
Yeah.
As well as things coming out and all that, so... we'll get to that stuff a little bit later, but for now we'll talk what we've been playing, and I will kick it off here. I've been playing some College Football 27.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say up front, they have been using AI in this game. It is disclosed on their Steam page for things that seem pretty poor for using it. As far as my ability to tell in the game, from what they're describing here on the Steam page, let's see, there's Dynasty and Road to Glory modes, storyline content in the hub screen, design, implementation, and tuning, so I'm not sure about those last two parts, but the storyline stuff, as they describe it, is literally just one line of text you get for some of the stuff you see on the main screen. Mm-hmm. In each of those modes, where you get like a little bit of flavor text, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say it's mostly been pretty poor.
Mm.
'Cause all you really expect out of this stuff is like, oh, this team is the underdog against this team. Look out for this player who's playing well. You know, little recap type stuff. With it being one sentence, you notice more when it sounds real stupid. Like I've seen description of a player that I think had it was like a player of the week type of thing. And it was like, just describing it as they stacked, you know, X amount of yards and touchdowns to win player of the week. And I was like, I've never heard anybody ever say stacked for that kind of description of stats, and it's like I don't think that's a good use of it, because now that I know that they're using AI stuff, I'm looking at it more and just noticing how either extra bland it seems, or that it's really not doing anything that they haven't, you know, it doesn't seem markedly better than anything they've done before with this kind of stuff. So it just sounds like it's a really stupid use of it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, the commentary scripting support, which could be something that could be useful, but I would also say commentary oftentimes has been pretty poor. So I started a Dynasty mode, which is their franchise mode, with the Kent State Golden Flashes, who's one of the worst teams in the country. They rate all the teams by stars from 0 to 5 stars, and they are one of the like dozen 0-star teams in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Which means I'm going to have trouble with things at times. But I was playing the second game against the FCS West, which is just the second tier division below the FBS, the bowl series division. Which is the top one, and basically a team that you should be able to destroy with any team in the main part of the teams in this, and which like Kent State is rated at like a 65 overall, and this team is a 55. I beat them like 60 something to like 20.
Mm-hmm.
So I beat them pretty good. They kept raving about how good the defense is for the FCS team. They're one of the best, you know, run defenses in the league. I'm like, this team doesn't exist. What are you bluffing them up for? And all this. They do have some good moments where they're like talking about whatever, and you're, you know, starting a play and things happen and it interrupts it, but they never go back to things they were talking about. Those are things that would be interesting as a way to do this stuff, but Mostly it just highlights for me how bad a lot of the commentary is. At least from the main guys. Because they like to lose context of what they're talking about, what the teams are. So many times where I was getting... So with Kent State, I was facing two really good teams in my first four games. South Carolina and Ohio State. And I was getting drummed by them. And they love to talk about how, you know... Oh, we're not, you know, we're not far out of this and all that. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? These teams are completely on different levels, and you're acting like they're equal and all that. And yeah, it's just poor commentary on that. Right here, trophy room support, which I don't know what that means. There's descriptions for all the trophies, and they also put commentary or the mascots in there as well. With like a history of the mascot kind of stuff, and I haven't looked to see if they're accurate on all this, but I've seen some of the writing be pretty poor in the way they're writing things. Like they use commas to quote unquote add context to things that didn't need commas to it, and it's like real poor writing on that kind of stuff. To which I'm like, if this was written by a human, I would be more lenient, but with it likely being AI, I'm just like, yeah, this is shit. But also that mode, that area of the game is literally hidden away in the menu screen. And the last one is creating more realistic play calls made by CPU teams, which seems more like a machine learning kind of thing. I don't know. And so far the play calling has seemed fine. It doesn't really seem like it's any... different from the previous games. It's they're not using it to like make the recommendations for like plays that you should call any different, any better and all that. So yeah, I don't know. So far it just gives me the ability to side-eye anything that's going on in this game. And it's the sort of thing where if I didn't get a code for this, I would not have bought the game because of the AI use. I would have been like, yeah, I'll skip it this year. But they made a lot of improvements on things and have fleshed out some other aspects of the game. Like in Road to Glory, the career mode, you get to... They have more stuff going on. So like when you're using your like time tokens to fill up different meters for your player... whether it's like your scholastic stuff, so you get better grades, and you know, meet the quota for what are minimum grades to keep playing, that kind of stuff. That's there's more events going on that might use those tokens, limit how far you can get. Whereas last year I could pretty easily fill that stuff up over the course of a season. And they have some of the other categories kind of just continually lose part of their meter every week, so that you kind of have to keep filling that up if you need to. You can let it atrophy if you want, but with the wear and tear stuff, you do need to use it on the body meter that will essentially heal you up for the week. As you do, you know, taking hits for each player kind of wears them down over time, and that can lead to stats getting decreases and all that kind of stuff that you kind of want to fix up just to maximize the chance of you playing well. And so, yeah, that's kind of some of the stuff they're doing there. Some of the downsides, I've had this game crash 3 times. So far, while skipping past the like last little cutscene stuff you get before you get to the menus to quit out to the back to the game, the main menus where you could save. Had that crash 3 times now, and once while I was streaming it, so that was fun to get that caught on a video. That video also showcased me throwing like 14 interceptions in two games. So, yeah, nice proof that sometimes I don't play well in that game. The Dynasty mode, they've added some new stuff. They've changed up the recruiting stuff a little bit. I don't know if it's any better, really, so far. I'm still got time to work into it. But it seems like they have players progress in their decision-making for who they're going to, you know, focus their attention on a little more quickly, so that you don't have a bunch of players on your board that's slowly whittle down versus maybe have a little more turn through that. They've added more presentation stuff, like there's drone shows now at the start of some of these games. That is neat, and some more team-specific presentation stuff. You'd have the ability when you start games to, if you're the home team, be like, oh, we want a blackout or a whiteout, or, you know, whatever color stuff the team has for the fans to all be wearing, you know, same color shirts, that kind of stuff to add to some of the atmosphere of this game. They've messed with the home experience where you're a visiting team, you get the stadium rumble kind of stuff that messes with your ability to see the plays you're going to be doing. Especially for kickers, they make that stuff a lot harder, which has meant that I've missed a lot more field goals in some of these games when I'm playing with the team. But yeah, it's been pretty good. Improvements in some nice areas. It's just unfortunate to have the AI stuff is like the thing kind of being a downer on all this for that. So yeah. So there's that. That's out on Thursday, I think. So I'm hoping to have a review by then. We'll see. Let's see. Yeah, I've finished up Solarpunk. So I'm going to be working on a review for that too. In my spare time. Mostly what I had to do. Basically, what I had left to do was basically just to get algae. Just another material that you can farm, but it farms very slowly compared to the ore and all that, because you essentially put this little drone that swims around a little space in a, you know, like a little lake or a pond or whatever to gather it. I had a drone that goes and collects it, but because it was so slow, it would literally never come back to my base area. Unless I just forgot about looking at it and missed it. So that was kind of fun to deal with. There was a one point where I got enough that I just went back over to the area and just picked it up before the drone could. Had to fight the drone for the algae instead of watching it fly long distances. Try to hope it would get back to me any sooner than it could be. So that was Solarpunk. I put down my thoughts in the review, but I enjoyed my time, but it's held back by a lot of accessibility issues. Too much of the text is incredibly tiny, no options to make that bigger because it was designed for a PC monitor and not a TV. So there's a lot of stuff there that is really hard to see. And they even have like a transparent like inventory screen that if you're looking over bright areas like clouds or daylight or whatever, it can be hard to see stuff that's in there as well. It also has bugs where some of the little pop-ups when you're highlighting things in your inventory would just stay there, even when I'm moving it around. There'd be like parts of my inventory I could not see what was in there because it just has UI that just sits, you know, doesn't move. A lot of like annoying stuff like that, and things that the game doesn't tell you that you just have to, you know, figure out through trial and error. They're kind of annoying, in spite of it having a literally a manual book that you can make to look through a bunch of things. Does not explain everything, so that's a bit of a downer there. So there's that. I played the playtest for Erosion, which is a roguelite that has been at Keeley's show once or twice. So far, it's a voxely looking game, kind of almost in like a Western kind of setting. And the way it starts is that your character is a dad who... I forget exactly how it starts, but you run into these bad guys who kind of creep onto your farm and coerce you into helping them. And in the process, they kill your wife and kidnap your daughter and kind of leave you for dead, but you kind of come back to life and realize you have to go into this dungeon, I guess, that, you know, in roguelite fashion changes every time. To try to fight through it and beat the bosses and get to the end. It's part of trying to get your daughter back, but if you fail, you get 3 chances per era that this is in. To which you lose 10 years and your daughter gets 10 years older. I think she's 8 when it starts. And so like where I was at, she was at 28. She'd passed by 10 years or 20 years. As part of the resurrection thing, is it takes 10 years to work. And in that time, like, you don't just have to go down the dungeon. There's sort of an overworld to explore. And so there was a neat bit after the intro. I went over to where the farm was that we started in, the family's farm, and there were like people that were like took over the farm, and I killed them. And so it was like you get a little glimpse in the menus of the timeline of things, and it's like, oh, you killed these people that were taking over your farm. And then when I got to 20 years later, it was like, oh, these people could have, you know, taken over this farm and maybe done some stuff, maybe become merchants or whatever. I didn't know exactly what went on there, so there's like some neat consequences of things, but it's also like, oh, you didn't kill these people that are over in this town, so maybe that's become a lawless hellscape or something. There are things like bridges and such that I didn't have access to, the way that you can lower it. So, but you can go around and fight enemies and all that kind of stuff. You risk losing health and, you know, dying out there and wasting your chance of getting through the dungeon, but you can't get like get things out of it. So there's a reason to potentially take that risk. And as you make progress, you know, you build up the base area around where you go into the dungeon. People show up to help you out with that. And so there's stuff there that you use to improve your stats and all that. So that seems pretty neat. I think the play test is over at this point. But it seems pretty promising for what it has. So, yeah, I am looking forward to that. I'm not sure any other platforms it might be coming to. But at least on PC. So I don't think it has a date or anything yet. So like, they're just taking feedback and all that. So there's that. And then the last one, I got Rhythm Heaven Groove. Don't really have too much to say about that because I've not played a ton of it. Mostly because, you know, it's the kind of game where you want to play it in a very specific way, so that you don't have like audio delay or anything. So that's limited the amount of time that I have to play it. But I played a good chunk of it, and that seems really good. It's very much like other Rhythm Heaven games, where, you know, all the games in it are, you know, a couple minutes long. They give you a good intro to kind of explain how the mechanics work, which are, you know, all rhythm-based, but usually trying out different ways of tripping you up. And so, like, from the demos, the beginning of the game, so the first one is you're this little round dude that's walking this path and have to jump through a hoop at a specific point. They kind of walk you through it, like, trying it just having it come to you, and it tells you, like, oh, that's hard, right? And it's like, all right, then we'll introduce these three other dudes that hang out in front of you, so you kind of get a rhythm to when you need to jump based on their jumping kind of thing. And it's kind of does a lot of that for the other games. So you're trying to play through it without making mistakes, or as many mistakes as you, as little as you can, to get in amazing, which gives you a medal and then helps unlock extra stuff alongside the mini games. I got one on that one, and then I got one on another one that some of them I felt like I made more mistakes than I feel like should have counted. Other ones I felt like I did better than I than it felt like it is rewarding me. It's just, I'm like, oh, you just did good. You know, passed it. But the second one is like this one with umbrellas that you're opening and closing. In specific patterns based on what the other three are doing. So sometimes it's like, oh, you're just opening it or closing it. Sometimes you're doing, you know, close and then open, or an open and close, like very specific patterns. Or you're doing it at the same time kind of stuff. So, yeah. There's one that involves like a frisbee that you're throwing, or that you're throwing, you're catching. That's the... The trick is that you have to count to seven before you jump. And by the end, it's literally zooming in on the person throwing it to you, as well as like not giving you any notes to count the seven. We'd be like, you know, one, two, three, four. It'll just be like one, two, stop counting for you. Just do one. And then you got to follow along, that kind of stuff. But then they just start zooming in on the person throwing the frisbee. So you have to count and also not have the visual feedback, which is sort of how Rhythm Heaven has been for a long time, which is they try to trip you up or moving things that you come to rely on. So then you have to actually get better at the rhythm stuff and the counting and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that makes for a really fun game. But I'm looking forward to putting more time into that. That's been fun so far. But yeah, that's been pretty much it. So how about you, Brandon?
As for me, I'm going through Splatoon 3, still playing that. There's a new Splatfest that's coming up this week, starting, I think, Friday, or perhaps a little earlier than that. But this one is more or less going to be related to the release of Splatoon Raiders, which comes out a couple weeks from now. I'm hoping to be able to get a copy of that so I can do the review. But this time the teams are speed, power, and tactics, having to deal with having related to the three styles of play that you can play on that are supposed to be able to play as in Splatoon Raiders. And, you know, it's cool. And one of the things I have noticed is that because we're getting closer to Splatoon Raiders, I'm seeing a lot of newer players showing up in Splatoon 3. And that's both a blessing and a curse, because one thing, we this game that's, you know, a couple of years old now is, you know, getting new fans, which is great. Only problem is it also means that a bunch of them are inexperienced and don't really know how to play the game effectively, or their internet connections suck. Because I've run into a couple of instances where the game has had to be like called due to somebody dropping out, or, you know, the even worse thing, which is, when someone drops out in the middle of the game, but the game keeps going anyway, which is something that shouldn't happen, but it does. You know, it's just, you just deal with it. As I've said a million times before, when it comes to Splatoon, you know, from the outset, the game is incredibly unbalanced. So you just kind of embrace it. But on top of that, I'm also going back and I'm doing a fresh run on Deltarune because I did and finished Chapter 5 last week. It was amazing, obviously, but what I'm trying to do now is I'm trying to do a separate run where I'm trying to find all of the hidden stuff, specifically the hidden bosses, because every chapter has a hidden boss that you go up against, and if you can successfully fight those hidden bosses and win, you get something called a Dark Shard. I'm going to guess that when the all of the episodes of this game are completely released into like a single title, I'm going to take a wild guess. Those Dark Shards are going to come into play in the end somehow. So I want to be prepared for all of that when that happens. Because much like with Undertale, I have a feeling that Deltarune is going to end up having some alternate stuff happening. But yeah, that's what I've been playing.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. And first up with the new month, we have new PlayStation Plus Essential games. And yeah, you can see that a new Call of Duty game is coming out because one of them shows up on this list.
Yep.
Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 cross-gen bundle, PS5 and PS4. So you can check out the second time they've done Modern Warfare 3.
Mm-hmm.
Which they claim has an all-new campaign, which doesn't really. Mm-hmm. They're kind of PvE maps you can play
mm-hmm.
in the form of a campaign, but they're not really campaign. It's kind of the weird thing they did that annoyed people enough that they, you know, took a break from Modern Warfare again.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you can check that one out if you need more Call of Duty, I guess. Let's see, for PS5 and PS4, For the King 2.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of a turn-based RPG, a little bit D&D-ish
mm-hmm.
To it. I played the first one, and that was pretty good. I haven't played the second one yet, but yeah, that seems like it's probably pretty solid, so you can mm-hmm. check that one out. It awesome. Also supports four-player co-op
mm-hmm.
for that as well, so you can each take control of one of the characters, so...
Yeah.
That seems neat. And then also for PS5 and PS4, CrossCode.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of Zelda-ish 2D action RPG that
yeah.
Features these like disc things you throw around to
yep.
Fight enemies and solve puzzles and whatnot.
Yep. I've played this one. It's an amazing game, but be prepared because some of those puzzles are not some of those puzzles are some real brain busters. Like they, you know, this isn't like, you know, Zelda where a lot of the puzzles are fairly easy to comprehend. Some of these require like pattern recognition and timing and, you know, just some of them are basically like the video game equivalent of like a Rube Goldberg machine. With like a lot of moving parts going on at the same time. So yeah, it's a great game. Just, you know, be prepared.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be available here on July 7th. Yeah. Anything you're checking out here, Brandon?
No, I've already played all these.
All
right. But, I will, again, will recommend CrossCode.
Okay.
That game is amazing.
Yeah. I played like an hour or two of it, and I've not gotten back to it yet.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the intro kind of drags a little bit.
It does, but it's worth it.
Yeah. Because I believe I just got past it, and I was like, all right, that's enough of this for now, and just never came back.
Because,
mm-hmm. Yeah, you go from the area you start in to a new area.
Mm-hmm.
I think because some shit goes down.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, that's where that's at. But yeah, during Evo, Marvel Tokon Fighting Souls mm-hmm. announced the last three characters that will be joining Ghost Rider's team.
Well, I was going to say they announced four characters, but we knew what one of them already was. So
yeah, we knew Ghost Rider was here, and
yeah,
his team is going to feature Blade.
Yep.
Which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Loki.
Yep.
Which is also cool. And Deadpool seems like will be the character where they just break a bunch of things about the game.
Yep. Like, we all, I mean, we all knew Deadpool was going to show up eventually, but...
Yeah. And yeah, the... Then they go to name the team, like, oh, it's the Midnight Suns, and then Deadpool's like, fuck that. Samurai Outriders.
Yep.
So yeah, that was a fun reveal there.
Mm-hmm.
For that, and then, yeah, also announced the new stage, Asgard.
Mm-hmm.
So that looks cool. Yeah, there's details here about each of the characters. Nolan North is the voice of Deadpool here, so he's still doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, then they also announced that there will be an open beta for PS5 and PC from July 24th to the 26th, so later this month.
Unfortunately, if you don't have PSN access, you're basically going to be blocked off. Because it was announced earlier today that the shit that went down with Helldivers 2, yeah, it's going down with Marvel Tokon.
Let's see. They say Blade will be on there as a playable character, so you get to try one of the new ones.
Like, but Blade has, I think that's like the first time he's been in a Marvel fighting game. So,
yeah.
In fact, I think it's like, outside of like movie tie-ins, I'm pretty sure that's the first time he's been in a video game, period.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Because he's black. Can't have him in games.
Exactly.
So there's that. Let's see. Onimusha Way of the Sword. Capcom decided not to wait until the 25th.
Mm-hmm.
So they announced that it'll be coming out 3 weeks earlier on September 4th.
Mm-hmm.
They decided to get out of that logjam at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Put it out at the beginning of the month, so we'll be able to check that out a little sooner. Mm-hmm. Just about 2 months, though. So. There you go. You got less time to play any Onimusha stuff if you wanted to play before that.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Let's see. Then we got some game. We got one more game here. Nivalis Knights. It's going to be out September 29th.
Mm-hmm.
This is the new game from the team that made Cloudpunk.
Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly, they made another cyberpunk game.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is more of a life sim. Basically, as the way they describe it here, this combines everything that draws you into the cozy life sims you love with a deep cyberpunk sim. The cyberpunk slice of life sim returns to the eponymous city from Cloudpunk. Mm. You can build a life for yourself in the bustling futuristic city, expanding from a humble noodle stand or nightclub into a booming enterprise. Mm. Explore the city's crowded waterfront districts and hidden alleyways, meet its eclectic citizens. Or simply enjoy a quiet life of fishing and home decorating in your home far above the clouds. So yeah, you can do a lot of that kind of stuff
there, yep.
Which seems neat.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of these games set in the cyberpunk setting, but doesn't require you to kill people or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you find friends, hear their stories. Customers, and maybe even find love, so, yeah.
Sounds cool to me.
Yep.
Might actually look into this.
Yeah. It's out on PC September 29th.
Mm-hmm.
So you can check that out. Also at the end of September.
Mm.
Like many other games. Then we got some delays here. Danganronpa 2x2.
Mm-hmm.
Got a delay from being out this year to early next year.
Mm.
They also have announced that, let's see, yeah, they've added a Slayhem mode and an enhanced world map that they've shown off here. So, mm. Yeah, there's the original scenario mode and Slayhem mode.
Mm.
They say in Slayhem, a certain incident triggers a dramatically different chain of events.
Mm-hmm.
Different victims, culprits, and tricks. Slayhem offers approximately 20% more content than original mode.
Yeah.
And yeah, they've added a major update to the world map for this one. Whereas Danganronpa 2, Goodbye Despair, features a side-scrolling map for traveling between locations. Danganronpa 2x2 introduces a 3D world map. It gives players a clearer sense of the island's layout. You can navigate, yeah, I guess, by 2D or running across the map in 3D. You can also, I guess, go around the 3D map in first person. That's a fun whole thing. So yeah, that's some neat extra stuff they're doing while they're finishing it up. Since it's not going to be out this year. That's good.
Yeah. I played the original Danganronpa 2, and I liked it quite a bit. I am curious, like, what's going to be new this time around.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's not the only game that got delayed. Ontos, another game from Frictional Games, the makers of all the Soma Amnesia games, most of the Amnesia games, have this new game, Ontos, with publisher Kepler Interactive. It was supposed to be out this year, but now it's going to be out next year. They say here, Ontos is our most ambitious game to date, both in terms of its size and scale, and in the depth and layers of our story and gameplay. To deliver this vision, we have decided to push the release of Ontos to 2027.
Yeah.
We look forward to sharing more updates about Ontos or characters in our world soon. So there you go.
I'm expecting to play something that's going to be both, you know, visually terrifying and philosophically nightmarish, the same way Soma was.
Yeah, they don't really make nice games.
No, they have never made nice games. Frictional Games has basically been making the same type of game since they started. And yeah, they're all terrifying.
Speaking of things that are not terrifying, the Subnautica 2 legal battle has finally reached its conclusion. Yeah, so Krafton and Unknown Worlds have finally reached a settlement in this legal fight that's lasted for a year or so. After they fired Gil, Ted Gil, and studio co-founders Charlie Cleveland and Max McGuire, claiming they had failed to do their jobs. Three execs filed a lawsuit against Krafton, claimed the publisher fired them and delayed the then unreleased Subnautica 2 to avoid paying a massive $250 million bonus. And yeah, in March, a judge ordered Krafton reinstate Gil as CEO. He was given control back over Subnautica 2's launch. And yeah, that's when we also learned that Krafton used ChatGPT for legal advice and all this, which did not work out. And yeah, Subnautica 2 came out in May and was a huge hit, ensuring that the devs would get the bonus that was promised to them. But as part of this, the new legal settlement means that all current employees of Unknown Worlds will receive a large bonus due to Subnautica 2's massive success. The bonus will be paid in 3 annual installments. Previously, only employees were around when Krafton purchased the studio in 2021, we're going to get the bonuses, so that is good to see. And as also as part of it, Ted Gil is going to be stepping down as CEO of Unknown Worlds. So yeah, they'll be finding a new CEO. But yeah, that is a good way to end your time there.
Yep.
Help get the game out and that it's a huge success. And get your people paid the bonus they're owed.
Yep.
And be able to resign or, step down and have full control of your future. Wish Ted all the best. And Krafton all the best in paying those bills. Luckily for them, they're able to stretch it out to 3 years, so they'll be fine. They could use some of that PUBG money for that. So, yeah. That's good news.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have anything to add, Brandon.
No, other than the fact that I'm pretty sure that this is going to be a book at some point.
Yeah, maybe.
Because this was just a years-long saga that just continuously brought out just the weirdest plot turns.
Yeah. But yeah, finally that can just be a normal game now. But yeah, we got new villains. SK Hynix, Samsung, and Micron. Mm. If you don't know them, they're the three main companies that produce RAM.
Mm-hmm.
They have been subject of a class action lawsuit, mm-hmm. claiming that the three have engaged in quote-unquote concerted anti-competitive behavior mm-hmm. in the DRAM market. This was filed in the District Court for the Northern District of California.
Mm-hmm.
That the three companies coordinated their exit from DDR3 and DDR4 production and pivoted to producing high bandwidth memory mm-hmm. for data centers. That's on top of accusations that they've been fixing supplies and prices since 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And the fun thing is, this is not the first time they've been accused of that.
Mm-hmm.
It happened quite some time ago. The filing also notes that Samsung, Hynix, and Micron were found to be taking part in a criminal conspiracy to fix DRAM prices between 1998 and 2002.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a while. They've been able to keep their shenanigans on the down low, but now seems like there's another lawsuit. We'll see. Lawyers also say that due to the massive amount of capital required to set up a DRAM fab, estimated to be between $15 to $20 billion, and a long roadmap involved, it's hard for new entrants to join the market and discipline three companies.
Mm.
So yeah, the class here is made up of consumers and brick-and-mortar retailers.
Mm.
So we'll see where that goes. That's probably just going to take a long time for the time being, so don't expect any resolution on that for a long time.
Yeah, I don't.
But at least somebody's trying it out.
Yeah.
And speaking of trying it out, Rockstar Games developers, mm-hmm. Especially in the UK, are asking Rockstar to recognize their union before GTA 6 launches.
Which I'm going to say good luck.
Yeah.
And I mean that both genuinely and facetiously, because on the one hand, you know, more organized labor in the gaming industry is always a good thing. And I say facetiously because this is Rockstar we're talking about.
Yeah. The union has been organizing with the Independent Workers Union of Great Britain since 2019. And now claims to represent a significant portion of the workforce across Rockstar's Edinburgh, Dundee, Lincoln, Leeds, and London offices. Developers credit Rockstar with making improvements to working conditions, including unprecedented average pay rises and financial incentives for crunch for the first time ever, leading up to the release of GTA 6.
Mm.
Formal recognition, the union says, would allow developers to work more directly on improving pay transparency and flexible working arrangements, as well as codifying further rules around crunch. So they're hoping to get that, and hopefully soon.
Mm.
We'll see if that gets anywhere, but I would not be surprised if Rockstar just delays that as much as they can so they can enjoy all the benefits of GTA 6's launch and not have to share them as much as they should.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's your GTA 6 news of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got to layoff news. Other Side Entertainment has laid off 18 more people after Thick as Thieves launch.
Mm-hmm.
This is the studio that is I'm trying to see here. It was founded by Paul Nureth.
Mm-hmm.
What's his face? Warren is in this. He's the studio head, I think. This was a small team that worked on Thick as Thieves. They put out that $5 like prologue, essentially for like two maps, I think. They were hoping that would do well enough that they would get to keep working on it to add a bunch more content to the game, but it seems like it hasn't done that well. They seem to be, at this point, about 10 people.
Yep.
So they might just be delaying the inevitable for this at this point, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they say fewer than 10 employees remain at the studio. Focus on performance maintenance for Thick as Thieves. A spokesperson said that there's currently no plans for studio to work on any future games. So yeah, they laid off 17 people last month. Canceled its in-development project codenamed Argos. So yeah, Warren Spector not having much luck after Deus Ex and Thief games that he worked on. Just continues to be another one, especially trying to make games in a genre that just doesn't seem to do well. At least when Warren Spector's working, which is not great. He's one of the people that is responsible for the genre of the immersive sim.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's see. Yeah, we got this, our first bit of Xbox news.
Yep,
Xbox
here we go.
Was set to publish IO Interactive's Project Fantasy, which they revealed a few years ago. But it seems like in all the other stuff that's happening with Xbox right now, this one got cut, at least the funding for it, on Xbox's end. So IO Interactive has, as a result, had to lay off some people for redundancy's sake, but say they are still 100% committed to the game, that it will see the light of day. So they're going to try and find other funding sources, or maybe a 007 First Light keeps doing well enough to pay for this thing.
Yeah.
To get to the finish line. I don't know what all of their plans are for it, but yeah, they still want to keep working on it. So yeah. Good on them. But Microsoft, yeah, kind of a poison pill at this point as a publisher for external studios. Because we had the team that was working on, was a Contraband, Avalanche. They had to lay off a bunch of people as a result of that getting dropped. And that just got canceled because they didn't have the means of keeping it going. Luckily, IO Interactive has a successful game right now.
Yeah.
Actually, too. With Hitman and World of Assassination as well, bringing in some money. So that's good to see.
Yeah.
On their part, but wish them the best luck in finding funding for this thing.
Yeah, genuinely.
So, yeah. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
And the last bit of Xbox news here is that another studio seems to be potentially on the chopping block, which is...
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's one of the really good ones.
Yeah, it's Arcane Leon.
Mm-hmm.
And they are working on Marvel's Blade.
Yeah.
Which is a game that got announced a couple years ago. They've been just kind of working on it. Potentially was maybe going to release it this year. It seems like that may be another year or so for that. And that Xbox sees blood in the water and maybe will come for them alongside the other studios they have been potentially looking at shuttering or spinning off to a new company.
Yeah.
Double Fine, Ninja Theory, Compulsion Games, and maybe more. Which continues to make that seem like it's going to be probably the worst series of layoffs that we've ever seen in this industry.
Yeah, it's going to be a bloodbath, people.
Just saying a lot because Xbox is responsible for a couple of those.
Yep.
From ones they've done previously.
Mm.
And yeah, as I've said, the immersive sim genre, not great for studios' success, and Arcane Leon is one of those studios with Dishonored, which has done fine, but generally never made big numbers on any of those, which is a shame because they are quite good. Prey did poorly as well, though they kept working on that for a while, so yeah. Unfortunately, when you had Skyrim and Fallout 4 buoying everything else, things were fine at Bethesda, but now when you're at Microsoft, everybody is vulnerable. And unfortunately, that seems to be the case for Arcane here, so yeah. So yeah, there you go. There's your Xbox news of the week. I don't know if you have anything to add, Brandon.
No, it's just... You know, I mean, it's Xbox itself is to blame because they just, they've, They've made so many bad choices, and I'm going to say Sony is very close behind them by what we're about to be talking about now.
So yeah, then Sony had their own things to talk about. First one up here, they've kind of done the thing we were expecting to happen at some point, that they are shutting down the store, the PlayStation stores for the PS3 and the Vita. They announced they were going to do this a few years ago, and then that ended up not happening because of the backlash to it. So they held off for, a while, and have come back because, yeah, it's not like those stores have substantially made more money since then or anything. PS3 store, especially, that's been around for 20 years now. Well, they aren't shutting them down right away. Sort of a tiered release here. In Mexico, Honduras, and Nicaragua, it'll be shutting down in August of 2026. Or the PS3 store, yeah, the PS3 store will be shutting in August 2026 for those three countries. In additional Latin American and Middle Eastern countries, it'll be in late 2026 for the PS3 store. Then in the rest of the countries, the PS3 store will close in July 2027. And the Vita store will close everywhere, I guess, based on the way they describe this, also in July of 2027. So you got a year to buy anything you need to and all that. You'll be able to download stuff for the foreseeable future. But I've heard people try to make the claim that, like, oh, they're gonna take away your games and all that. It's like, I don't think that's gonna be the case. That stuff is pretty easy to make to keep going for a long time. Because like a lot of this, like the reason why a lot of these stores shut down on these older platforms is because of payment processors and all the other regulation stuff you have to keep up on. And at a certain point, these platforms aren't justifying the improvements to be made on that stuff, unfortunately. So yeah, kind of leads to that. So yeah, the PS3 store, especially if you still have a PS3 to access it, there's a lot of good retro games on there, PS1, PS2 stuff that are worth checking out. Some of the PS3 stuff you can buy and then get the free upgrade on the PS5 and PS4. For some of that stuff, so you can do that, and those might be even a little bit cheaper on the PS3 to get that upgrade. It'll be like $7 instead of 10 for some of that stuff, so that's well worth checking out. There's also just a lot of really good games on there, as well as the big physical games you can get digital versions of there for some pretty good prices. Though at this point, there's no more sales. They've done sales on PS3 in quite a while for that, so that's worth checking out. The Vita has less amazing games to it, but still has quite a few good ones in there. And I think that's where you can still access PSP stuff. Sort of your last bastion of PSP games on there, so those are things you can check out. Which I have my PlayStation TV hooked up somewhere here, so I can access the Vita stuff through there. So yeah, I might end up doing a stream of Vita stuff just as part of this, the place through the PlayStation TV. So that's a shame, but 21 years for a storefront like this is better than anybody else has done so far.
Yeah, pretty extraordinary too, I would argue.
Yeah, the Vita less so, but also it sold a small fraction of what the PS3 did. So it's not really too much of a surprise there. But yeah, that's one of your Sony updates. The other one here is that they announced, let me see here the specifics. They announced that physical game production for all new games releasing on PlayStation consoles will be discontinued starting January 2028. Following this date, new games will be available on PlayStation Store and retails in digital formats only. This transaction has no impact on games that are already released or will be releasing prior to January 2028 in this format. As they say here, this is a natural direction for Sony Interactive Entertainment to adapt to consumer trends, as the general preference for digital media significantly outpaces physical discs. Transition will enable us to align more closely with how most of our community prefers to access and play games today. They do seem to suggest that they will basically be selling codes for games at retailers for that, so that'll be a way to access this. But yeah.
So basically, we are fastly approaching the era where we will not be owning the games we purchase.
I mean, kind of, we're already there.
I mean, technically, yeah, but the existence of physical media makes it that much harder.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So that was also on a game-by-game basis.
Mm-hmm.
Because some publishers just don't put their whole game on the disc.
True.
To save costs for, you know, double-sided discs like Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe on Xbox they don't have support for the double-sided discs, so that's why a lot of like first-party stuff is basically an install disc.
Yep.
And why a lot of Sony stuff has been able to generally work out of the box, whether you have an internet connection or not.
Yeah.
So I think the website is Does It Play? That shows that at least on PlayStation it's let's see, there's 94% yes on offline play for the discs they've covered here. 73% no on the download required to play it. Which is pretty good, and I imagine that's mostly on the PS5 side.
Yeah.
There's, whereas if I look at Series X, 49% no for no download required. 87% for offline play allowed without an update or anything. This increasingly has not been a huge surprise, because if you look at the consoles available, Xbox side, there's one SKU out of four that has a disc drive. On the PlayStation side, one comes with the disc drive, but all of them are available to have an add-on, disc drive added on.
Yeah.
I feel like if I could set the direction here, is to release the next system without a disc drive and allow the people that want the physical option to pay the extra for the drive to add on.
Yeah.
And like keep everything the same. You don't have to focus as much on the physical if you don't want to as a company, but allow people to bear the brunt of that cost for the physical stuff. But yeah, you also dive into this and you realize, you think about it, sort of how many businesses this will affect. I subscribe to Gamefly.
Yeah.
That will affect, you know, new releases in, you know, a year and a half at this point.
Yeah.
A lot of retailers rely on this, a lot of like local game retailers. Even GameStop, though, they're falling apart for other reasons.
Yep.
Which I realized recently, I went and traded in my PS5 to essentially get the disc drive for my PS5 Pro, among other things, and the wealth of options I had for GameStops has dwindled down to basically two.
Yep.
The one I went to, and there's one that's accessible, but not anywhere close. Whereas I used to have at least five or six for that, but their problem is all the shit outside of the games stuff. especially as they try to get into trading cards and retro games and all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
where they can have higher margins. But retailers have, like the bigger retailers, have been largely slimming down on their game stuff,
mm-hmm.
Focusing on the big stuff that would be selling a lot, but you end up losing a lot of games in that process. Though I checked out Best Buy yesterday because I was looking at it because I've seen people like, oh, Nintendo supports physical. I was like, they charge $10 more for physical games. Mm. And like, as much as people are obsessing about GTA being $80, like, Nintendo has officially released 6 $80 games at this point. Mario Kart World and a bunch of the Switch 2 editions that have extra DLC and all that. Balloon that up to $80 if you didn't own the game already.
Mm-hmm.
And Fire Emblem will be number 7.
Oh.
Because that's a $70 game that'll be $80 at retail.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Sony should have said, hey, we'll charge $10 more for physical.
Mm.
I don't know if that would bring in money, but the way that it seems like it's been talked about for this, for the disc stuff, is that it's, you know, it's obviously an increasingly smaller market.
Mm-hmm.
As people generally switch over to digital games.
Mm-hmm.
And that even for how many people are using discs, the amount of money that are coming out
mm-hmm.
of them is even smaller than that. And that leads to this whole process here where it's just less and less of a market that Sony seems to want to focus on, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
As costs for everything seems to be going up. Disk drives, at least so far, are not increasing in price that much, but
mm-hmm.
that could also just be a matter of time, the way things are going. But yeah, this affects a lot of things, a lot of companies, even your boutique publishers, like your Limited Run Games and Fangamer and IM8Bit and all these other companies that have been doing all these special edition releases, that ends up increasingly being how a lot of developers and publishers are putting out their games, which is are companies that are going to be feeling the brunt of this kind of decision. Because if they don't have, you know, PlayStation games, they're increasingly just going to be focused on Nintendo, Switch and Switch 2
yeah.
releases, and that's, you know, only going to go so far.
Yeah.
Because true. These are things they're selling for, you know, regular prices. Like, these prices are much more than the digital version sells. So usually putting goodies, extra goodies to justify mm-hmm. the increased costs, whether they go up to like $100 or $200 or just from $20 game to $40 for physical with some stickers or whatever in it. It ends up just leading to this situation where, yeah, people continue to stop buying physical games.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of companies that get affected by that stuff.
Mm.
And Sony just sees that stuff going and seems to not want to keep going in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately. So, yeah. I don't know if you have anything to add, Brandon.
Nope. No, it's just sad.
Yeah.
It's just sad and it's infuriating. And the backlash is immense.
Yeah. I don't know that it's going to do anything, but I think Sony could. This seems far out enough that they very much are planning the PlayStation 6.
Yeah.
As part of this.
Only console. Yeah.
And as part of this, so that I imagine if they do decide to step back from this, they have options for, you know, a modular disk drive
yeah.
add-on, that kind of stuff that could easily be worked into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically what they've been doing with the PS5, mm-hmm. as much as people complain about it, a lot of that, like, that's really smart design stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, people are very mad and Sony gets to be the butt of jokes. as we know, social media is that brands get to jump on whatever's popular.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they care or not doesn't matter, I guess. But you get to see everybody be like, we're not making physical pizzas anymore. It's like,
yeah,
that's funny, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Congrats on your joke. Other people share Pizza Hut or Domino's or whoever's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need attention. But yeah. Like the only physical stuff I've really been buying is just like stuff that's on sale at Gamefly or the occasional bad game that I'm like, I should have a copy of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like Mind's Eye or Skull and Bones. Mm-hmm. Basically, when they start getting clearance out, which is not really helping anything.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would need to be buying a bunch of physical games, as well as many more people than currently are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no Gamers Club Unlocked kind of program out there that makes that a better deal.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I got rid of that, and I was like, all right, no more reason to get physical games, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to spend the same amounts and just keep filling up plastic tubs games that increasingly get heavier and heavier.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. That's a fun whole thing. They seem to do the smart thing in terms of like taking a break from social media posts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's people that have nothing to do with this decision don't get yelled at as much.
Mm-hmm.
And just disassociate from the responses they get.
Mm.
Because yeah, I've not seen this many people post on the PlayStation blog comments.
Mm-hmm.
Even on stuff that has nothing to do with it.
Yep.
Like here's one about people voting for the best game of June.
Mm.
And they're being like, fuck you, Sony. Alright. Alright, great. Sure. Mm. To be honest, that's always what the PlayStation blog comments have been. Just people yelling about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Airing their grievances. Now this is more worthy of that than the average thing, so... Okay, luckily there is a limit. People aren't going back into old posts to talk shit. They did have to... The Dune people had to post about Dune Awakening.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, people are yelling in their comments. It's like, they have nothing to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
But oh well. We'll see if they make any changes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's potentially possible. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, people posting... what is it? Petitions on change.org, and I saw the numbers. I was like, that's not going to do it.
Mm.
It's like tens of thousands.
Yep.
Like, this is the point, I guess, at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Yeah. Do you have anything to add?
Nope. Just, again, the whole thing's really freaking sad.
Yeah. I don't think that much of a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody would move to this point.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like the numbers are just heading there.
Yeah.
Luckily, it's not happening for like the reason that like things have been happening like this with the music market, where people just move to, iTunes and Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
And so CDs basically really don't exist all that much anymore at physical mm-hmm. retailers. You can maybe go to like a Target or Target or Walmart and maybe get the latest hot stuff from the best artists, but you're not going to get the selection that you used to be able to get for bands back in 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And even that can be rough, and movies, proliferation of all these streaming services, though the young people are starting to realize the greatness of physical media in there. Maybe a little late, because now getting copies of many of the new releases are now more expensive because they're only available at boutique sellers.
Yeah,
for some of these movies, but like the reason we got into DVDs and Blu-rays was because you would just have to hope it showed up on TV at some point. Like, hey, I can have a DVD of this and watch it whenever I want. without ads, without it being cut down for TV air times and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy all that. You enjoy the entirety of Titanic on your own.
Mm.
Nobody take out the boobies, any of that stuff. So yeah, that was a two tape VHS release.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, that's how long that movie was. So yeah, physical is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it sucks, but most of the time it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I was looking at, yeah, Best Buy, I mentioned. Them having third-party sellers on there is, mm-hmm, just makes it insane. I was looking at the Switch 2 games that were on there.
Mm-hmm.
There's third-party sellers that just sell you a two-game bundle of various Nintendo games for more than it would cost to buy them separately.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, you can get Mario Kart World for $80 from Best Buy?
Mm-hmm.
But you paid $90 from a third party seller. It's like, no. Fuck off with all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
There's like pages of this, and I'm like, God, this is a mess with third party sellers. But sometimes that's how movies got back on Best Buy, from those third party sellers. They're actually willing to sell them, and Best Buy is not dictating that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So yeah, that's your Sony news for the week, and the end of your bad news for this week.
Yep.
Yeah. Unless you have anything to add on anything here.
Nope.
All right. Not enough. Let's get to the end here.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to Brandon for joining us this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news. And if you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know. They should check it out. It's like strangers who are also sad to not have physical games in a couple years.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's going to do it for the show this week. Yeah, we'll be back next week with some new news and games to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.